Blue-eye's closest relatives are in the East Coast rivers. So there's Pacific blue-eye and honey blue-eye, and these are other species that are basically related. You know, it's hard to tell, but what's probably happened is that back when Australia was wetter, that group of fish was more widely distributed. And now, somehow or other, this one little variant evolved and hung around and more or less got left out here in the arid zone, and has basically evolved into a spring specialist over time. The most interesting thing about the blue eye is that there's nothing else like it anywhere in the inland. And as in terms of recent history, I don't know, I couldn't tell you whether they had wider distribution in Western Queensland, but I very much doubt it, because there's been a fair bit of effort expended into looking into that, and they've never been found anywhere else but here.
Other threats then, obviously this invasive mosquito fish is one that is the biggest issue, but what about things that are more recent like cane toads?
Anything that's been a threat to Australian ecosystems, I suppose, is potentially a threat to the spring. So, for example, we've got a pig program going here, like we trap and shoot pigs because pigs love water. They get in and they dig up all the plants. You know, the plants are endangered. It's not a good thing. So cane toads definitely are a new one. You know, I mean, they've probably been here for, I estimate, 5 or 10 years now, but, you know, we really don't know what impacts toads are having. Yeah, we can only really sort of deal with where we're up to now, and I think that where we're up to now with these particular springs, you know, it's fairly obvious that the biggest threat is those invasive fish, you know, by a country mile.
Talking about this particularly wet season, has that created difficulties in terms of managing the fish and the springs?
It's been interesting. It's been good in a lot of ways, because what it's meant that in certain areas where we've already done some work to either keep fish contained or monitor whether fish can get places, we've basically found very little movement. So, for example, we haven't found that Gambusia have managed to colonise some areas that I thought they might. But in another way, it's not quite so good, because they have actually colonised one area. They've recolonised one area where I thought they might not, if you like. So, but to be honest with you, wet years are good years for me, because it means that I can actually see what's going on. If it just stayed dry all the time, I'd be lulled into a false sense of security that I'm actually, you know, good at it or something. This is basically one of four springs where we've still got only native species at Edgbaston. There's about 30 springs that have got fish in them, and out of those 30, 23 have got the introduced species Gambusia in, and mosquito fish. So once they tend to get into a spring, they certainly seem to wipe out these little redfin blue eyes. So this is probably the biggest population left in the world, I suppose, of this particular critter.
So any ideas why this particular spring is protected from those invasive species?
I think it's just in a really lucky position. And even on a big flood like we've just had in September or last summer, you know, summer 09, 010, we didn't get any Gambusia getting in here. So it's a bit of a... It is probably the most important spring on the place, yeah. This is about the same size or same surface area as the last spring we were at. Slightly different structure, it's got some slightly deeper water in it, but the biggest difference is that this spring's been invaded by Gambusia or mosquito fish, whereas the other one only had the native species. So in this spring, we've only got Gambusia, we don't get the redfin blue eye or the goby, and as we're standing here, you can see them all milling around and eating something dead in the water there.
Now this spring also has a little plastic fence around it. What was the aim with that?
It's basically a garden barrier edging fence that we've put all the way around some of the springs where we either want to keep things in or keep things out. So in this particular case, we're trying very hard to see whether we can contain these Gambusia within this spring so that they don't spread to the others, because there's actually two or three other springs quite close by that have got native species in. And cross fingers, in the last rain in September and also back in summer 09-10, the Gambusia haven't got over our barrier into the next spring, so we can be happy about that.
Now, these fish are obviously more robust looking than the blue-eyed fish and the other native species. Now, that is the concern, isn't it, that they can't live side by side because these have just got so much more going for them?
Yeah, basically. These fish are, I think they're rated as the most successful invasive species in the world in terms of fish. So they're up there with cane toads or rabbits or foxes in terms of just how successful they can be. They've got a huge competitive advantage over the natives, because all native Australian fish are egg layers, whereas these fish, Gambusia, are they're live-bearing fish. And so what happens is the females carry the live young, and then they give birth to fully formed babies. So if you think about that in terms of the fish world, what it means is when the babies come out, they can predate the fry of the native species because they're so much smaller, and they don't have an egg stage as such that makes them vulnerable.
Now, how were they brought into the country? Were they an aquarium fish, or was there some other reason?
Now, they were actually brought in to control mosquitoes. This was back in, I think it was in the mid-1920s. So the idea was, it was a little bit like the cane toad. It was very similar to foxes and cats, the same sort of mentality. You know, we can't blame people now, but it's really unfortunate that they thought that way then. So the idea was, if you have this fish from the jungles of Central America, you know, it's been demonstrated to eat mosquito larvae. Great, we don't like mosquitoes, let's have it. But, of course, you know, they might eat a few mosquito larvae, but I challenge anybody to say whether the numbers of mosquito have diminished in the last 110 years as a result of them.